So Jackie has been talking mostly about translation of ideas, cultural translation, and the translation and the traveling of texts. And what I would like to try to do is to tackle the question of translation from a different direction, i.e. from the direction of travel and the mobility of people, and how migration in particular, the movement, the geographical movement of people, connects with the mobility of languages and with issues of translation. Now, I have two images I want to show you, and I'll sort of toggle, yes, between the two. So the first one is a picture. What I'm interested in particular, is the maps at the bottom, but actually the whole sort of stratification is very interesting, because what you have there is the Fori Imperiali in Rome, Roman ruins, so a marker of imperial civilization, European Mediterranean civilization, and at the bottom of it, significantly, not anywhere else, Mussolini, the fascist dictator of Italy in the 1920s, had some maps of the empire, of the Roman Empire, of the expansion of the Roman Empire, sort of produced and placed precisely there to display the mighty power of Rome. And of course, at the time, there was an extra map there, which was the map of the return of the Roman Empire, was the map of the colonial expansion of Italy, which he had also placed there, talking about memory, indeed, and monuments of memory. Now, the other map I want to show you is this. I don't know if you can see it. I'll let you look at it for a while. But this is also a map of the same space. It's a Venetian Portolano, as they were called, a mariner's map of the Mediterranean again. Two images of the same space, but two inherently and conceptually very different images. And based on those images, I can tell you two different narratives, two different stories, if you want, about translation and about migration, about mobility of people and mobility of languages. Same space, and it's a significant space if you think about it. The Mediterranean for centuries and the Mediterranean today is a space across which migrations happen, and a space across a space which today has been compared, for instance, in many ways to a sort of middle passage towards an increasingly closed-up fortress Europe. On the other hand, what you have here is a Portolano which almost dissolves the land, and all you see here is these connections, these lines that connect coasts. What's inside the land almost disappears, but they connect coasts across multiple routes and multiple networks. And you can think of this of two narratives. One, a narrative of national cultures, national languages, national borders, which somehow are meant to contain, but also possibly are meant to be expanded through colonial expansion, indeed, through conquest, through power, and which in which migration and translation have to be contained, have to be regulated. They may be interesting in terms of enriching, of bringing in some riches, but in ways that have to be policed, and anything else, anything that goes beyond that, somehow breaches the rules. It's an infringement, and it's something that has to be controlled. On the other hand, the Portolano, so that I would say is sort of the image that you get from these. The interest is all on the land here and on the possession of that land. The image that you get here is so much more fluid. It's about the fluidity of the sea. It's about connections, networks, passages. And it's about, in a sense, if you think about it in terms of migration and translation, is about these as the norm rather than the exception in many ways. And it's interesting that we can think about things in this way. Translation, in a sense, mind you, I'm very conscious of the fact that both of those maps, by the way, are about power, and the Venetians had themselves ways of controlling their landscape. But there are two very different ways of thinking of power and of communication as an instrument of power. Now, if you think of translation, in a sense, translation is a bit of a balancing act, a paradoxical balancing act between these two different images, between different ways of thinking about movement. On the one hand, sort of translation as the enforcement of sameness, if you want. Anything that comes in has to be translated, so it becomes like us and it has appropriated and kept within the limits. And on the other one, translation as a way of embracing difference, and the examples that, Jackie was giving you talk very much about that too. And it's interesting, there's an Italian scholar, Paolo Fabbri, who has said the translators in this sense are a bit like bumblebees in doing this balancing act. Bumblebees, he says, and I'm not sure if there are people who know in here, they can tell me whether he's right, but he says, according to the laws of physics, their wings are too small, the body's too big, they shouldn't be flying, and yet they fly all the time. And translators are the same. They manage this balancing act all the time. Or they don't. Translation can fail, and translation can also be used in inappropriate ways. And if you want me to continue with the metaphors, this is an image, it's a cartoon that appeared in an Italian newspaper, translating the Mediterranean, again, translating him as the Dead Sea, as Mar Morto, but in this case, in a much more dramatic way. Failures of translation, failures of migration, failures of mobility are indeed very dramatic. And that's one reason why I find, for instance, that ethically talking very easily about cultural translation and of people as translated men is very ethically questionable, because it's one thing to translate and maybe to manipulate, maybe to abuse, to transform texts, and it's one thing to do the same thing to people. So what do we think of when we think about the mobility of people and the way in which this interacts with language and with translation? One thing that is interesting to me is that we tend to think of translation as much less pervasive than it is. We tend, I think, still to think of translation as something that we encounter when we encounter the foreign, when we go out or when we bring the foreign in. But we don't tend to think of translation as something that is, in fact, constitutive socially, politically, of any society at any point where we live. If you think about it, and if I asked you, I think most of us have, and certainly in the English world, I suspect, probably more than elsewhere, the sense that monolingualism is the norm. Well, actually, if you look at the numbers, it isn't. Most people in the world are plurilingual, have more than one language, move between languages. But we tend to think of translation as, again, something that's contained, that happens in specific places, that is entrusted to specific people, to those miracle bumblebees who are the translators, rather than something that actually touches and informs very much a lot of our life. And I think if we make this shift, if we rethink translation in this much more pervasive and also much more political way, if you want, then it is interesting that we need to enlarge the notion of translation. We need to start, for instance, to think about self-translation, about people who are constantly moving between languages and translating themselves. And we do it all the time. How do we interact with language and with who we are, with our identity in our different roles, in our private life, in our professional life, in the communities, multiple ones that we are part of? Those become crucial questions. But I have a number of, I have a number of other questions that I would like to ask. So if we think about travel, mobility, migration, and translation and their interaction, if we think about translation not just in a monolingual, but in a polylingual world, and if we think of translation as not just someone translating for us, but also acts of self-translation, and remember, if we don't have access to translation, if we're denied access to that, or we are denied that what we are doing is actually effective self-translating, we can be silenced. Again, silence is an interesting connection here. Then I think if we think about these things, a number of questions start to come up. And we need to start asking, research needs to start asking, okay, if we think about mobility of people, mobility of languages, if we think of translation in this way, then where does translation actually take place? And we'll find that it's no longer in those contained places, in translation agencies, or in the European Parliament, or in publishing houses where a translator is contracted to do something. It happens much more pervasively. Who requires it? Who authorizes it? Who sanctions it? Who controls it? Who decides what is a good translation and what is a bad translation? Who decides who can translate and for whom and who cannot? Who is not a good translator or an authorized translator? Who can self-translate and that voice will still be heard and not silenced? How do individuals and communities use translation? Think of all those new spaces. We need to go into them, think about them. Urban spaces in which polylingualism is the norm. Or those electronic environments, for instance, which have become a lifeline for diasporic communities, but where, again, multiple languages cross through the voices of that community. And how can we conceptualize translation needs and translation rights. And there I think translation becomes extremely important, again, politically, because we need to start thinking in terms of language needs, language rights, in terms possibly of a biopolitics of language, of the way in which state control, institutional control is imposed over language and over the multiplicity of language in the name of those narratives that are much more about we are all monoglots, we speak one language, we have one homogeneous culture, we can identify with each other. And we need to think in terms of rights and needs at that point, and rights and needs of individuals, rights and needs of communities. And if we think of translation this way, I think it becomes an incredibly vital issue for society today at many levels. Right, I think I'll stop there with the questions, and again, I'll check, but yes. Next is the breakout. There was nothing else on my slides. So, as we said at the start, well, if you're already happy where you are, stay. But please remember there's food over there, so take a couple of minutes to go and replenish your plates or your glasses if you want. And then there are pens and sort of markers and whatever else on the tables. We'll come and mix with you, but please start talking and start writing down ideas and questions and suggestions and anything else that comes to mind. Okay?